It's the Totally Football Show. Today, City look rootin' tootin', practicing their shootin'. United visit Chris Hughton, who probably puts the bootin'. Proving having class is one thing, being schooled is another. It's week two of the Premier League as we round up all the big stories at home and across the continent in the Totally Football Show. And your Totally Football Show today features Carl Anker.
Excelsior. Hello, everyone.
Hi from everyone to you, Carl. Michael Cox is here.
Good morning, James.
Good morning to you, Michael. And Sasha Gurionov.
Good morning, James.
Did you bring your carpet, Sasha Gurionov?
And I just left it on the wall at home this time.
Right. Do explain to everyone what we're talking about.
Rostov playing against the NEC yesterday at home. 1-0. Lovely goal. The opener. Stadium goes mad. And there is a man in the crowd waving a properly massive carpet. No one yet has an explanation for this, but it has become a bit of a meme in Russia.
Oh, that's
Everyone's
nice.
All over it.
Oh, lots of things I want to ask you about, particularly about Kyrgyzstan.
Oh, I haven't been, but I hear it's a lovely place.
Right, well, we'll be discussing that later. And German Cup action, Michael.
Yep, looking
forward to that. Because you demanded it. Carl, I know you want to talk about Cardiff Newcastle.
Yes, I do.
All right.
I very much want to talk about that game.
If you'll permit, though, let's start with the two Manchester sides. City, you recall, played the Terriers. United played terribly. It's a nice symmetry there. Sunday at the Amex against a Brighton team that had been widely tipped, largely by us, for a lot of trouble this year. They did United 3-2. Chris Hughton, who, Michael, I think you were expressing some concern about prior to the season.
That wasn't me, but...
Okay. Did you share that concern?
I vaguely agreed with it, if that's
right,
fine.
Okay. Yeah. What did he do Sunday? How did he turn it around from the Watford defeat?
I mean, to be honest, I didn't think Brighton had to do anything special, to be honest. I think sometimes Brighton do play very good football. They're good on the counter-attack, but... Really, United just self-destructed. You know, United actually started the game reasonably well. I think Lukaku had a chance 15 minutes in, and everything looked to be going swimmingly. But as every time that Bailly and Lindelof were exposed, especially Bailly, who had a really dreadful game. I mean, everything he did was wrong. Bad tackles, silly fouls, trying to get the ball where he couldn't win it, shooting from 40 yards. It was a shambles, really. And I thought that panic just spread to the rest of the team.
Right.
It was interesting to see afterwards Pogba saying that United didn't have the right attitude, and he'd count himself as one of those players, because that's quite an unusual admission for a player to say they personally had the wrong attitude for a game.
Carl, you're a, I think I'm right in saying, a Man United fan.
As you can tell by my accent, I very much support Manchester United.
This performance has been described as their worst since Sir Alex Ferguson left, which is a big shout. Would you go that far?
It's up there with the Moyes debacle, the Moyes year, the Annus Horribilis, is that how you say it?
My language
was
very poor. Yeah, no.
It was up there with that. It's the first time Manchester United conceded three goals in the first half since 2015, which I think is under Van Gaal. Juan Mata and Ashley Young. So you're playing a centre midfielder, a slight, not particularly mobile centre midfielder on the right wing. You're playing a former right wing who is now 30 plus as a right back. Brighton just feasted on it. Absolutely feasted down that right flank. Eric Bailly didn't know what he was doing, so didn't know whether the hole will give. Didn't do it at the right time. It's awful.
And nicely done. Another 30-something, of course, Glenn Murray kicking things off for the Seagulls with that delightful flick.
For me, what Murray did there was basically ghosted in. 34-year-old, all of Glenn Murray, ghosted in past Man United defence. I think that's fairly damning on what United were doing at the back. And I think Jose Mourinho did have a point after the game saying they made mistakes, because all three goals they conceded were just terrible cases of defending. They weren't really exposed, but individually, players switched off, made the wrong decisions. I mean, the Bailly penalty that he gave away was terrible, but also the defending on the corner for the second goal. The ball actually does come out, and Brighton have another chance to put it back in and do it so calmly, and United players don't really react to all of that. So I think for me, the fact that first goal, Glenn Murray did what he did, just exposed just how poor this United team at the back are doing basics now.
Right. Well, Daniel's story last week on this show was marvelling the fact that even though they won, Man United's performance against Leicester had seen their odds for the title doubling. They basically almost doubled again naturally with this defeat, 25-1, when the fun stops. I'm wondering whether that's a phrase You know, Ed Woodward's thinking to himself. What do you think, Carl, as a United fan? Was this just an embarrassing defeat? Are we moving towards something? Is the whole kind of third season Mourinho syndrome, I don't want to be overdramatic, but is it kind of escalating, accelerating?
Dread it, run from it. Destiny still arrives. It's en route. He's going to buzz cut himself very, very soon.
How long?
Before Christmas, he'll have the buzz cut.
So you're saying the buzz cut.
The buzz cut.
You meant metaphorically.
The buzz cut is the terrifying moment. When Mourinho turns up and he's cut his own hair and it's in a buzz cut, that's when you know the implosion is on.
Ideally with a bandana and stripped to the waist. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Rambo style.
The key thing about Mourinho's time at Manchester United, the most succinct way I can describe it, is that he's been living in a hotel for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then when they said, why are you living in a hotel? He goes, I don't like cleaning up after myself.
Well,
that's all you need to know about Mourinho's management technique and what he thinks of Manchester United. I don't like cleaning up after myself. That is it.
Do you like cleaning up after yourself?
No, I can't stand it.
There you go.
Don't make me a football manager.
Yeah. Okay. What do you think, Michael? There are a lot of people pointing at the performance against Brighton and saying, in tactical terms, this is an illustration of how irrelevant Mourinho is now as a manager. Is that fair? And what do they mean by it for people like me?
I don't know what they mean by it. You'd have to ask them. But I think there's a sense that the better teams in the Premier League are more proactive. They win the ball higher. They play possession football. They take the game to the opposition. I'm not sure this was particularly a good piece of evidence to suggest that he's behind the times. I thought the strange thing from his perspective was the substitutions at half-time. I thought Mata had looked quite bright on the right flank.
Uh-huh.
And Andreas Pereira, who I haven't seen that much of, was really bright in deep central midfield. And to take those two players off, I just thought was very Mourinho to go for the young kid and the technical talent and bring on, you know, rawer players. Obviously, Fellaini came on later.
Yeah.
It just seemed quite simple.
Carl?
I think when a set of United fans say Mourinho is irrelevant, I think he's not in the top 0.0001% of football managers anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're... His bread and butter was, I make my teams very hard to beat. So we have very, very strong back four, some very skilled six-foot bruisers in centre midfield. And then I have a sledgehammer up top as a number nine. So it used to be Drogba, used to be Ibrahimovic, sometimes it was Samuel. Now it's meant to be Lukaku. Right? That's how he plays franchise football.
Mm.
He opens up his Starbucks style at all these different football clubs and he gentrifies your club. That's how Mourinho works. It's not working anymore. That style of football is no longer in vogue and it can be exploited.
If it's a bitter brew.
It is.
That he's serving.
If you're getting done on a near post attack by a 34-year-old striker and you're bread and butter is, I organise a central defence.
Right.
Something's gone wrong.
Can Mourinho point to the lack of activity in the transfer window and have a valid excuse there?
But I think he doesn't really get the best out of his existing players. And you can't really, you know, just because you haven't signed two new centre-backs, you can't stop coaching the current ones. And also, one person we haven't mentioned today, Martial. Martial was upset by the Sanchez signing because it knocked him out of his usual position, and he's sulked ever since. Did he do much yesterday?
In the 60 minutes where he was on the pitch, he did not find Lukaku with one pass. I'm a card-carrying member of Martial FC.
Right.
Please, boy, please give me something.
James Checkley asking us, after another poor United display, who do the pod see as a Mou replacement? He hasn't had his haircut yet, but we're in that territory, Sasha. No referee for him to lean on and help him clean up in his hotel room or whatever Reed does. Sasha, where do you think we are?
Well, he's beginning to be rude to people quite openly. After the game yesterday, I think it was a reporter from beIN Sport asked him about the chemistry between the players on the pitch. And he said, you must be fantastic at your job to have the ability to from the stands, to speak about chemistry between players. And yeah.
But doesn't Guardiola say that kind of stuff as well?
I don't think it's openly as angry and as a get away from me.
Right. Mourinho made some very pointed comments about how he doesn't want to talk about the errors. So I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically said, when we play well, I will say this player is playing well and plays well. But previously, you've been very critical of me when I'm critical of my players. So I'm not going to be critical of anyone right now. It's a very interesting war of not words between him and Paul Pogba and Ed Woodward right now.
Right.
So all three of them are basically giving words to the effect of, if I say what I want to say, I'm going to get in trouble. So I'm not going to say anything.
It's passive-aggressive.
Oh, yes. And I adore it.
Michael, do you feel more confident about Brighton's long-term prospects this season in the Premier League after this performance?
Well, they've got 3 points I didn't expect them to get. Mm. So, yes. I think they're quite suited to playing against good teams, actually. They're very solid. They're very good defensively. And they're occasionally good on the counter-attack. if they're at home to a side who plays like Brighton does, I'm not sure they're as effective. But they're a great story. It's great to have them in the Premier League after 20 years of not having a ground. I know it's been repeated, but for them to beat Manchester United, I always think there must be some kids at school, you know, his classmates are all Manchester United fans back in the day, and he supported lowly Brighton, and now he gets to have revenge over them twice in 1 year, which is quite incredible.
Brilliant. I wandered past Withdean Stadium over the summer.
Withdean Stadium?
And, like, just walking around it and where it is, and I just couldn't believe that the team that played here is now in the Premier League. I think it's brilliant. It is... I mean, I was just, leaving school when they nearly went down, and Goldstone, they were being chucked out of it. So it's sort of those teenage memories you do actually remember quite well. And you hold them too, you know, when you're well into football and this stuff is happening, it's completely unfair. And so to see them in the Premier League now, playing in this lovely new stadium, beating Manchester United, I agree, it's brilliant.
Just one last point on United. They've often played badly over the last couple of years and should have conceded lots of goals and haven't done so because David De Gea has been brilliant. Whereas you look at him recently, he's letting in a lot of shots, isn't he? And it does make a big difference. It's a basic thing.
Shots on target, 10 conceded.
That's not
zero in 2018.
Is that including the World Cup?
That's the World
that
Cup.
Is including the World Cup. Yeah. He is regressing.
Right. When you're losing De Gea, everything else starts looking worse. Don't need to tell Pep Guardiola that, of course. The baldy. Still, he had a pretty successful Sunday. His side putting 6 goals past hapless Huddersfield. We'll talk about that after this.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Think you had a bad Sunday? Who had a worse Sunday, Sasha?
Ben Hamer.
That's so true. And probably a whole load of people in the German Cup. But we'll talk about that later.
They almost conceded as many as those German people in the German Cup.
Yeah. What was the biggest scoreline there?
11-1.
11-1?
Mönchengladbach won at an amateur team from Bremen, whose captain then got man of the match. Nice.
Oh, that's sweet. But this could have been 11-1, couldn't it? Against the Huddersfield side, as we mentioned on Thursday, had not conceded in their 4 previous visits to Man City. I'm still not quite sure how that worked. Is it fair to say that this City side is actually better than last year's?
Well, I think they're third year into the Guardiola project, so by definition in my head, they should be.
Right, okay.
I mean, even though after the Arsenal game, he said they only had, you know, a couple of weeks over the summer with all those players coming back to train, but in this game, compared to the Arsenal game, they changed formation. Of course, I mean, arguably it made sense because they didn't need a fourth defender against Huddersfield at home. So they pushed Mendy up. The movement was excellent. And you'd really, when the opposition keeper starts, you know, so uneasily, I think in the third minute there was a messy corner, there was a hurried clearance. And I think from that point onwards, the Huddersfield defence really wasn't sure what it was doing. And against Man City, that's basically terminal. And then you're also faced with clearances from Edison. I mean, that goal kick, I mean, how do you defend it? Because you cannot be offside off a goal kick. So technically, Aguero can just run around somewhere near the penalty box, and probably Edison will find him with a pass. So I saw Schindler got a bit of criticism for it, but I think it's very hard to defend. I think Hamer's starting position is correct. He's on the edge of his own box where he should be. But it's a ball hit with so low trajectory. It's, you know, he can't come for it, I don't think. But in that case, I think Hamer should drop back and just let the defender deal with it. He gets caught in no man's land, and I think then it plays on his mind. And then after that, the other 2 goals. So basically, there's a basic mistake for the 2-0 because Hamer is probably a yard too far to his left. I think this is actually quite a basic goalkeeping mistake where you should be where the ball is, middle of the goal, you draw a line, probably a left foot shot.
Sasha's a goalkeeper, by the way, so he can say this.
And so he does actually better in the second half in the 72nd minute on the other post where he saves from Aguero because his positioning is correct then. And then, of course, for the 3-0, you know, ball coming in. And again, looking at his technique, I'm not sure how he thinks he can catch it because his hands are in front of his knees. The ball is likely to bounce off there. So then there you go, 3-0 down after your goalkeeper has a shocker. And after that, it's only damage and imitation. And then up steps David Silva and takes a free kick. That's absolutely unsavable.
Yeah. So, which free kick did you prefer? That one or Kieran Trippier's?
Probably Trippier's, actually. Yeah. I think that was...
You're joking.
I think Trippier's was further in the corner, no?
Trippier's was just like a driven... Like Silva's was beautifully placed. I thought Trippier's was the least spectacular free kick you'll ever see. I thought
really?
Yeah, goals like that are so overrated, honestly. You should be hitting the target pretty much every time with that kind of shot.
How was Kieran Trippier's free kick?
Well, it was further out, and it was just driven over the wall, whereas Silva's was...
No, he got fantastic dip on it.
He got dip.
I think I love the fact it was hit hard and it went down. I think for me, that's like, oh, it got
I think
everything
it's the
right.
Perfect range for a free kick like that. Silvers was delicate into the top corner.
Carl, do you have a view on this important issue?
I always prefer a goal struck with venom.
Okay.
Than a deft one, so Trippier gets my vote.
Trippier gets your vote. Mendy's role in this game and burgeoning relationship with Aguero. Does that mean we're not going to see much of Leroy Sané this year? This is a Scoops tactical question. Can they play together down that left side, or is there only room for one?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think we are going to see a different system this season. I mean, it's worth remembering last year, Guardiola started off trying to play the 3-5-2 with Mendy on the left, which didn't particularly work. And then Mendy got injured, so they didn't have a player who could do that. I do think we're going to see a shift from playing two really high wingers to playing more overlapping wing-backs. Obviously, Walker was out in this game, so they used Bernardo Silva there, which was a strange one, but he did very well. So yeah, it's going to be a different system. And Mendy's the key difference. I mean, Mendy's a really, really good player. It's not just the typical overlapping energy of a left back. He's a brilliant pass with the ball. He's an excellent crosser. The ball into Aguero was just a wonderful cross. And just if we could go back to the first Aguero goal, I think that's a really interesting development, the kind of long kick into space, because I think we've seen some very distinct kind of tactical areas in the Premier League recently. We had maybe 7 or 8 years ago, it was all about possession football. Then we had lots of teams who were very good at pressing and teams were frightened to play into the press. Now I think teams are actually inviting the press. So City want to be pressed in goal kicks because then they can launch it long. Sarri at Napoli and presumably under Chelsea, they played almost tempting the opposition up so they could then cut through the lines quickly. Arsenal are playing out not just because they want the ball at the back, but because they want the opposition to come into them. And then they can use pace in behind. So it's an incredible situation that City are the best Route 1 team in the Premier League. I mean, they scored that goal against Arsenal in the League Cup final with Bravo, didn't they?
Yeah.
Pretty much the same goal. It's amazing how it's so cyclical.
But also last season, I remember when City played Liverpool, they were taking a goal kick. And as you were saying, there wasn't actually anyone in the middle of the park. I think everyone was pushed up towards the penalty box and there was like three guys up front. And there was nothing in the middle of the pitch. But one thing I think also to say with Sarri at Napoli, which I think he might struggle to replicate at Chelsea, he had Pepe Reina in goal, and whose distribution is still absolutely fantastic. And I'm not sure that, for example, Kepa can give him as much.
And also, I don't think Italian sides press as intelligently as English sides. I think that's a difference we've seen so far with, to a certain extent as well with Arsenal in that first game, although Arsenal played out very well against Chelsea, which we'll talk about in a minute, I hope.
Oh, yeah, no, we absolutely will. We should, I suppose, mention the Man City doc, All or Nothing, which everyone's a buzzing about. And Mourinho felt moved to comment on, despite not having seen it. Have you seen it, Carl?
I've seen episode 7, which is the episode...
Why did you start there?
That's the episode from April 7th this year, the derby.
Oh, I see.
The 3-2 Man United, Man City game. So that's the one with the pointed Mourinho comments recently. So the start of it, there's some few jibes about the fact we can win the Premier League in the derby. Boys, G up. And this is why Mourinho's gone, oh, I see they're talking about me in this episode. I should get royalties. And then maybe don't give me royalties. I see you're going to print out a T-shirt saying we did it on the derby. I won't get the royalties if you just give me the T-shirt. Which is a really good response from a manager. And then you go off and lose in a pathetic manner to Brighton. So they have. It's a very impressive...
Is the show good, though?
It's a very impressive, slickly made documentary. Right. It's better than Being Liverpool, if you remember that one, from Brendan Rodgers' first season. Liverpool, I believe.
The envelope
story. Yeah. So it's
low bar.
It's more sickly made than that. You do get some insight into the tactical innovations and tweaks Guardiola makes. So talking about how City are better.
Yes.
It is basically because Mendy's here now. Like, City were fantastic and historically good last season. Little asterisk. Benjamin Mendy was injured with an ACL injury. Mendy is getting something like 12 crosses in a game, which he did against Huddersfield. That's your option when a team's playing a low block. If a team's playing a low block, just give it to Mendy. He can just hit wherever he wants. And you've got Aguero, you've got Gabriel Jesus, two of the smartest number nines right now.
Right. Sasha wants to jump in.
And this is exactly the difference. He said he has not last season after the Arsenal game. He went and Mendy.
Yeah.
Mendy had two assists in the Arsenal game.
So now you can get done by Aguero or Jesus. If that doesn't happen, then David Silva or Kevin De Bruyne will get you. If that doesn't happen, Bernardo Silva will get you.
Kevin De Bruyne, whose injury in the middle of last week, some people thought, could this maybe, for example, and so on. But no. Not against Huddersfield, at least. We'll find out in the next game, which I think is against Wolves. That'd be an interesting one. Michael, I know you're keen. Oh, no.
No, can I just say one more thing?
Go on, then.
It's just funny that you say to Sasha, yes, a City better, and he says, well, it's Guardiola's third season. And with Manchester United, we say, are they worse? Well, it's Mourinho's third season. Yeah, it sums up the true difference.
There's a very interesting anecdote from, well, Bella Goodman and Larry Bird both maintained that a coach in his third season, that's it. Past the third season.
Carlo Ancelotti, I think, has a similar...
Because once you get past the third season, the players tune out. So they stop playing to be good and start playing to be good enough based on what the coach likes, which therefore removes a rung from their potential.
And what do they say about managers who've been there for 20 years?
Wenger out.
There you go. Let's move on to Chelsea-Arsenal. Sash, you were there.
Yeah.
At Stamford Bridge. 3-2, a lot of fun.
A lot of fun.
Sarri enjoyed 75 minutes of it, and the other 15 minutes he didn't enjoy. But are you a neutral? Do you have any skin in this game or not?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I think I was just curious to see how two new managers would do against each other. But
what conclusions did you draw?
Well, and just a slight caveat to the 75-15 from Sarri. He actually then went on to say that he particularly enjoyed the first 25 when Chelsea absolutely strangled Arsenal. And what I found really interesting is sort of comparing also to his Napoli. I understand that his Napoli did a lot of pressing and attacking via the left-hand side. And this is exactly what they did against Arsenal. And particularly, I thought, they picked on Gyökeres Mkhitaryan because... Arsenal started.
Okay, now sorry. I know who you're talking about, but I'm not going to pronounce that way. Is that how you should say it?
Mkhitaryan. But I mean, I could carry on saying Mkhitaryan because people understand it. Mkhitaryan.
Okay.
And what's the name of that country again?
Kyrgyzstan. Any other things you'd like to say? Mkhitaryan.
Mkhitaryan.
Mkhitaryan. Yeah,
it's Mkhitaryan.
Mkhitaryan.
Okay.
Okay.
So Mkhitaryan, in the first half an hour, did absolutely nothing right at all. He lost the ball every time. He didn't cover Bellerin at all. And it was an interesting moment early doors, I think about 6th or 7th minute. He picked up the ball, suddenly ran into three Chelsea players, stopped, and I think Willian nipped in behind him, nicked it, and went off. And the former Spurs and Arsenal legend in front of me was very critical of what Mkhitaryan did then, as in just stopping and going, what?
Spurs but, and Arsenal legend.
I can only think of one.
Yeah, him.
Him. He needs no introduction, Carl, or CV.
So he was very upset with Mkhitaryan, but I think the Armenian was really caught out with this pressing. And then after that, every time he got the ball, there was two or three people on top of him. And also the way Chelsea opened Arsenal up for the first goal was absolutely beautiful, because I think Willian gets the ball, Bellerin goes towards him, pass back to Jorginho and behind into that space, which Mkhitaryan tries to cover, but there is no way he's catching Alonso. Slides it across to Pedro, done. And this press, I think, worked so fantastically well. But yet, at the same time, the second goal was very much a throwback to last season, because it was Azpilicueta to Morata, just a simple ball over the top. Right. And then I was thinking, how on earth does he get into all that space? And then you look at the replay, they're all on the halfway line. It's complete madness.
Yeah. Arsenal's high line. Michael, did you enjoy this game, or were you just kind of sputtering at the TV screen?
No, it was good. I thought it was a game that was very much... what it was, two sides adjusting to new systems. There was just space everywhere. It was just space in positions you don't usually see space. I thought that first goal was really interesting because it was one of those where Pedro was lurking in offside position. And it's actually quite difficult to defend against that. I appreciate the concerns in the with Mkhitaryan, or however you pronounce it, and I completely agree with you. But it is quite difficult when a player's in that position. You can get a diagonal ball and a square ball across the face of the goal. It's quite tough to defend against. I think the problem with Mkhitaryan is that I'm not sure you would ever really choose to have him and Ozil in the same team. I think you need quite a specific system. And when you think about how they came to be in the same team, in a way Arsenal didn't really choose for that to happen. They basically had to take Mkhitaryan because it was either get him or lose Sanchez in the summer. But that was when they thought Ozil was probably going to be off because it was the end of his contract. Then Ozil renewed his contract. So you've ended up with two, I'd say, relatively similar players who I think at home against a bottom half team, fantastic. But it basically means you've got one of them in a wide position having to track back. And last week it was Ozil who had a real job against Mendy tracking back. So in big games, I'm not sure how they're going to fit into the same team.
Effectively, I think you end up sort of carrying one of them, because I think after 15 minutes, then Emery was trying to readjust his formation to basically cover him. I think Xhaka went into cover. I think Torreira sort of did it a bit more in the second half. So you're effectively readjusting to cover this one player who's letting down your whole system, who then scores and provides an assist.
we were wondering what Latin for more of the same for, you know, Arsenal's club badge is. Pluris is them, says Mike Goss. Thanks for that. There was a lot of familiar sights, especially in terms of their defending, Carl, the Gunners. But there were positives too. I mean, the way they came back to make it 2-2.
Oh, yeah. Something that's really struck me is the fitness levels of this Emery Arsenal side. So if you saw the preseason photographs, Petr Cech looks like he's eaten old Petr Cech. and has increased some in muscle mass, as has Aaron Ramsey. I know they have recently brought in some of the fitness coaches from Aussie Rules football side, Port Adelaide Power.
Really?
Yep.
I wonder what made them... Why did they choose Aussie Rules?
Some best conditioned men in top sport in general. Like, if you want a top condition run
Aussie
ball
rules.
Action, Aussie Rules, then I think it's rugby league, and then you can get into MMA and whatnot.
Aussie Rules would make them stronger than rugby league.
I'm not going to argue with an Australian man about that. I'm not going to argue with a Northerner about that. So just... The fight back is something that you don't normally, that you didn't see in late stage Wenger years, because they just seem kind of knackered, whereas now they just look fitter and more able to apply effort. The press will get there. I'm still very confused as to why they're trying to play a high line when your centre backs are Sokratis and Mustafi, and why you're trying to they're doing this sort of weird, bad Jogi Low German thing where their centre backs are quite wide from each other and your full backs are pressed forward. But like we saw against Germany, Mexico, that can lead you very, very susceptible to counter attack, because once you get past the midfield, which is not being particularly well aided by Granit Xhaka.
Theirs is more in Ian Holloway Blackpool version, I think. but I mean, Unai Emery's been around the block a few times. What is he trying to do, Michael?
Well, he's trying to do what they did with one of their goals, where they played it forward from the back and passed through the entire team. I think 10 of the 11 players got a touch, apart from Aubameyang, and they put it in the goal. I mean, the defending when the ball's been high up the pitch has been pretty bad. I actually don't agree with the fitness point. I mean, I'm sure he has done a lot of fitness work, but it was notable in this game that Arsenal completely died after half time. I mean, to use your favourite expected goals measure, James.
Yeah.
They scored 2.1 expected goals before half time and 0.1 afterwards. They just didn't have a chance. And I thought that was, like we say, quite familiar to Arsenal. And it's funny how Marcus Alonso seems to score against Arsenal every time, because I always think there's been a few battles between him and Bellerin over the years. And I always think that just really sums up the difference between Chelsea and Arsenal over the years. Bellerin's so much better technically than Alonso. But Alonso is determined, he's strong, he keeps on causing Arsenal problems late goals, headed goals. This one was a close range finish. But I do think there were some positives for Arsenal. I mean, they created so many first half chances, particularly with cutbacks. I think their 3-4 best chances were pretty similar balls into the box.
But I think there were cutbacks into exactly the area where Kante's supposed to be under the old system.
Okay. And the fact that he's now playing further
up. Yeah, there's just a massive hole in front of defence.
Do you think Sarri's going to take a view on that in a game or two's time?
Well, I mean, it's very odd watching Kante now, because there's Kante trying to, you know, finish crosses, trying to head them in from like 6 yards out. And I'm still sort of adjusting to that. But I think whenever they get hit on the counter, and this is something I think that was levelled at Sarri before, vulnerable to counter-attack, this is where Kante's too high up the pitch. So they were kept on cutting the ball back into roughly the similar-ish area where these unmarked players kept arriving and, you know, mostly hoofing them over, but they did manage a couple of goals. But I mean, I think Arsenal had, 5 really, really good chances in the first half despite all the Chelsea pressure. And then, of course, when they got it to 2, I think it will be missed after that. From Sarri's point of view, I mean, he says, well, we must press high up the pitch. If that fails, we're in trouble. Well, yeah, and you do need to do something about it, because I think this is not a fail-safe system.
Right. Go on, Sasha, just before we take a break.
A bit of love for Mateo Kovacic, who came on. Pass completion, 100%, 43 out of 43. And Hatto just looked very, very tidy, linking it all up.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at RoyTheRoversOfficial.com.
Listeners to all the way to the end of a previous podcast will recall that the odds on Arsenal being bottom of the table come the end of August were, I think, was it 4-1, Sasha?
4-1, I thought.
Something like that. It was surprising. Next up, as I mentioned, they're up against the Hammers, who lost at home to Bournemouth again. An Arnie penalty, and then 2 goals in 6 minutes around the hour mark from the Cherries, sparking a general exodus at the London Stadium. First off, are Bournemouth going to be okay? They're off to a cracking start to the season. Carl, you're nodding sagely. Yeah?
Yeah, Bournemouth will always be good. They're good in that weird 12-team mini-league that is at the bottom of the Premier League.
Mm. All right, 2 wins out of 2. Callum Wilson fit again and scoring.
I'm really impressed by how Eddie Howe very much... Well, basically, I don't particularly think Eddie Howe's very astute in the transfer market, and I think he realised that a couple of seasons ago and just goes, all right, I'll just use what I have.
Well, no, he's got Richard Hughes, our pal Richard Hughes, who's one of the... And they brought in David Brooks, who a lot of people are quite excited about, from Sheffield United.
Yeah, I was unaware of him, but he was lively here. He was very keen to shoot from long range. Not particularly accurately, it must be said. But yeah, he looked very good. I thought Callum Wilson was excellent. I mean, just his all-round game, his movement, his touch, his link-up play. He's been inconsistently good over the last two or three years, Wilson. But
he got injured for ages, didn't he?
Yeah, he had that really bad injury. But it feels like he can...
Was it ACL twice?
Yeah. And any player that comes back from ACL is amazing.
Legend.
Yeah, pretty much.
But it feels like he could be the kind of player to have a really, really good season. I mean, Bournemouth do have a lot of the ball. They do create chances. And with his movement like that, I think he's just really good forward to watch, I think.
I think they've got a fair few players who are kind of waiting in the wings of the new arrivals to come in and potentially have an impact. But off to a cracking start. West Ham spent a lot of money and did bring in loads of players. What are they still missing?
Time.
Bottle?
It's really hard to gel. This isn't FIFA or Football Manager. You can't have five or six new starters
right in
a truncated summer and then expect it all to work all at once, especially with the new manager.
But is that, a lot of people are saying that they need a defensive midfielder. Would that be fair?
Yes. What? I think Daniel Storey once said this when Fulham got relegated, words to the effect of their squad was too weird.
Okay.
That essentially, to exist in the Premier League, you need some form of coherent parts. Right. And sometimes
is it particularly
weird
then, this West Ham squad?
It's very odd, isn't it?
Is it?
You've got this supposed British base of Noble and Jack Wilshere surrounded by... It feels a bit like when you're making like jambalaya and then right at the end you take like a massive bit of soy sauce and dunk it in. And now you're going, why does this taste of soy sauce? That's how I feel when I watch West Ham. What is that?
Okay.
What's that weird flavour?
Okay, well, how should you make jambalaya, briefly?
Chicken breast, chorizo...
Okay.
Good rice, tomato, let it go, orange.
Okay. What's the spice you would put in?
Cayenne pepper.
Okay, because this is a Cajun. This is a kind of Cajun classic, isn't it? Jambalaya. Right.
So Mark Noble is soy sauce?
I don't know. I'm not sure if Felipe Anderson might be
Felipe
the dash.
Anderson, you think? Is Felipe Anderson soy sauce?
He might be.
The thing is, the image I have from the West Ham game is Callum Wilson running through everyone and Mark Noble just gently jogging after him.
Just on the condiment front, though, if you were going to add a random condiment at the end, it's got to be Tabasco, surely.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Or?
Sriracha sauce.
Oh, yeah, that'll do.
I mean, they got Carlos Sanchez, who came on, I think, for Noble.
Yeah.
And I expect will start pretty soon.
And he would represent the defensive midfielder, would he?
He would. I thought you were going to ask me about condiment then, but he's definitely a defensive midfielder.
What condiment would he be? How does a Parliament sauce, do you think?
Yeah, if you like. If you like. It's the wrong area of London, but...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I don't... I think Noble and Wilshere is going to work together. I think they're both always out of position. And I think Carlos Sanchez, who hasn't had a good experience in the Premier League previously, has always looked pretty solid when I've seen him elsewhere. Uh-huh. And will sit in front of the defence. And I think Pellegrini likes that kind of player.
Okay, so don't worry too much.
I would be a little bit worried, but I'd be less worried once they bring a defensive midfielder in.
Okay. West Ham's former manager, David Moyes, by the way, do you know which job he's been linked with?
USA. USA. USA.
Yeah, that's surprising, isn't it?
Well, they just failed to qualify for the World Cup.
Uh-huh.
I suppose they may be looking to do something drastic by bringing
David Moyes.
I'd have
got someone in from Aussie Rules or something like that.
That would be bad.
That would be bad.
Also, in London football news, Spurs had a derby with Fulham and it went very well for them because they won 3-1 and Harry Kane, 1,065 minutes and five seasons of Premier League football, scored a goal in August. But, more importantly, Moura scored a belter and Trippier scored the goal of the weekend, Michael, as you were.
He wouldn't get in my top five, but well done to him for scoring. And I like the Lucas Moura goal because he's quite right-footed, Lucas Moura.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the kind of goal you can score with your left foot. You know, he didn't ever look to get any power with that. He just connected nicely. But I thought Spurs were impressive in this game. And, I mean, Kane, I know he scored. He hasn't looked that sharp so far. But I thought what Tottenham did really well was they got midfield runners forward to support him. So Eriksen was arriving late. Dele Alli always does that. Lucas Moura, who's naturally a proper kind of old school outside right, was also in slightly more central positions. So it took them a while to get the breakthrough, but it was all Tottenham, really, for long periods.
OK, were Fulham any better?
Still look like they don't quite do it at the Premier League pace. The mistakes they were making, I think you can get away with them in the Championship where people think slightly slower. But in the Premier League, they were just seized upon by Spurs. Having said that, I think for me, Mitrovic scored the best goal of the game. Very much playground stuff. I loved it. Ball comes across, he was stretching for it, ended up on the floor. Sessegnon dinked it back in and on his knees, he headed it in from about 2 yards.
Oh, nice one. Do you know that is his 13th league goal since debuting for Fulham in February? That's very impressive. Right, anyway. Okay, no Son Heung-min, because he's off with the Asian Games, South Korea, of course.
They're not doing very well, are they?
Well, they won their first game, since you asked, Sasha, 6-0 against Bahrain, but then they lost 2-1 to Malaysia on Saturday, meaning they're second. They need to beat Kyrgyzstan in their final group match on Monday.
No way.
And hope that the other game, Malaysia against Bahrain, goes their way. Ooh, that's exciting. That is exciting. And, as you're undoubtedly aware, if he and his South Korea teammates come back with the gold medal, he gets exempted from military service, which is no laughing matter in South Korea. It's a full 21 months. Full 21 months of you know...
looking over the border.
Sentry duty.
Yeah, yeah. Sentry duty. He's from I'm so excited that we mentioned Kyrgyzstan, because that makes what's coming up next, listener, relevant. Stay tuned as we bring you Kyrgyzstan football. All right, listener, if you'd like to come and see us, we're going to be in Manchester on the 5th of October at the Royal Northern College of Music. Ooh, Rory Smith's going to be there, Daniel Story as well, probably somebody else. You can find tickets at ctickets.com and all the details and stuff there. If you can't wait that long and you're in the London area, well, here's happy news. The Queen Elizabeth Hall on Monday, the 24th of September, just about a month away, will be our venue, will be the venue, as we bring you another Totally Live. And Michael... and you'll be joining myself and one or two other people for that?
I am.
Southbankcentre.co.uk for all your ticket needs. Right. Wide world of European football, particularly wide this week. In Europe, obviously Ligue 1, week two of their championnat, which saw Paris Saint-Germain victorious against 3-1 over Guingamp. Well, Kylian Mbappe with a brace on his return to PSG. Sasha.
Gigi Buffon with a great save.
Gigi Buffon with two great saves, I would suggest. But equally, lovely scenes at the end of the game when Gigi swapped shirts with Thuram. Hang on. That sounds familiar. Yeah, this is Marcus Thuram, who's a forward, actually. Lillian's 21-year-old son. And people pointing out that, OK, this was August the 18th, 2018. You had Marcus Thuram, Timothy Ware and Gigi Buffon on the pitch for the first time. Almost exactly 19 years ago, August 21st, 1999, it was George Weah, Lillian Thuram and Gigi Buffon in his debut performance. It's kind of like the same story we did last week, but with another, you know...
And Parma back in Serie A.
And Parma, yeah, where we'll talk about Serie A then, because they had a 2-2 draw. 2-0, the most dangerous scoreline, as you know. They were 2-0 up against Udinese. Udinese came back. We'll discuss the events in Il Campionato on Wednesday in Golazzo, but one of the biggest stories in Europe on Saturday was the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo was debuting for Juventus, their match away to Chievo at the Bentegodi. Juve went 2-0 down, actually, and came back and won 3-2. Chris himself didn't score. He did hitch up his shorts. He had a goal disallowed, and he broke the Chievo goalkeeper's nose, but they're all pals now. He sent him a text. And Sorrentino said, oh, you're a legend.
Isn't he in a neck brace?
Yeah, he did have a neck brace. He really got clattered. It's part of the Bernardeschi goal that won it at the end. So they won. Napoli, who we were guilty of being a little bit negative about in last week's Colazzo, early days, but they had a big game. They went to Lazio on Saturday and won 2-1. Carlo Ancelotti with a little bit of a tactical tweak. I don't know if you saw that, Michael.
No.
He moved Hamsik to the Jorginho role. Ooh, which a lot of people are going, hey, what? But of course, Ancelotti is the man who made Pirlo. Pirlo used to be a kind of Baggio-esque figure, a 9.5, whatever you want to call it, and he dropped him back to that kind of deep line playmaker thing and invented a whole new genre of, Anyway, so that was a great start. Roma just about got past Torino with a fabulous volley from Edin Dzeko. The only big team not to win, indeed, was Inter, who lost at Sassuolo. We'll talk about all that stuff on Wednesday. And other things too. I think we might discuss the extraordinary Luciano Gauci this week as well, if there's time. Also from the Totally canon, no, that's not good. Also available from the Totally show, you've got Totally Football League with Caroline Barker. Almost certainly Caroline and friends are going to be talking about Bielsa's brilliant start with Leeds. Almost certainly they're going to be talking about why West Brom fans were chanting at QPR, are effing boiler he'd get in your team during their seven.
But did you see that QPR defending in that game?
I think after
about two goals, it was men falling over in slow motion. It was utterly embarrassing.
Right. Who's the QPR manager right now?
Steve McLaren.
Oh, it's Steve McLaren.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, all that kind of thing. And League One, League Two news, that's coming up in Totally Football League. Caroline Barker hosting that on Tuesday. Andrew Slaven will bring you Monday night, Tuesday morning, the Totally Scottish Football Show. Scottish Cup this weekend, Michael.
And Rangers playing FC Ufa of Russia on Thursday in the Europa League.
Oh.
That is a team from Bashkortostan. For some more long
from
names
where?
For you. Bashkortostan. It's about, I think they're about 300 miles east of Samara, before the Urals.
Okay.
And Bashkiri is where it's sort of like ethnic minority, if you like, in Russia.
Uh-huh.
And they have their own little republic. It's quite rich in oil, so it's quite a well-to-do place. And they're probably more into ice hockey there. Their team has won the ice hockey championship. But FC Ufa were only founded in 2009. And the famous former residents include Emmanuel Frimpong, who was just a one-man comedy show for 2 years when he was out there, leaving the locals utterly bemused and just couldn't believe what they were dealing with, basically.
With a dench on his back.
I think the dench came on maybe after he moved, or was he still too far? Because then he went to Arsenal Tula for a bit. But yeah, it was. But basically, the locals didn't quite know what to make of it. But it's a very young club. Kanchelskis managed there, Kolivanov managed there.
FC Ufa,
yeah. And Viktor Goncharenko, the current manager of CSKA, did half a year there. And finally, Sergei Semak, who's the new manager of Zenit, also did a season and a half there, took them to sixth place last season. But they're quite unremarkable, to be honest. It's the first time they've been in Europe. They got past Domžale and they nearly lost to a team from Luxembourg in the previous round, a team called Progress Niederkorn, whom Rangers fans might recall from last season as they lost to them in the Europa League.
You spit that knowledge at your neighbour when you're watching Rangers Ufa and you know, reap big respect.
But the locals are so excited that Gerrard's going to visit. Not Rangers. Everyone's talking about Gerrard coming too far and they just can't believe this is happening.
Going too far.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
It is a long way.
Nice.
That's a great Kanchelskis link, ex-Rangers player as well.
Yeah, exactly. And he didn't do particularly well there. And Kanchelskis actually stood out in the summer by his particularly vociferous criticism of Stanislav Cherchesov. Initially, he was in tune with everyone, and then he just carried on whilst everyone kind of went, okay, Cherchesov did all right. So he's been a bit of a figure of fun in Russia.
Oh. You mentioned, what was the name of the republic again?
Bashkortostan.
Is that near Kyrgyzstan?
Nowhere near.
Okay. So Kyrgyzstan is one of the five, are they Asian?
Five former Central Asian Soviet republics.
Okay.
And the reason we're talking about this, not just because of the Asian Games,
yeah,
is because one of their number has starred, was a hero in the DFB Pokal, better known as the German Cup.
Right.
Who kicked off this weekend in the first round. 64 teams go in. Teams from the lower leagues host the bigger teams.
Mm-hmm.
And already there's been a few shocks. None bigger than SSV Ulm 2, Eintracht Frankfurt 1. So the holders have gone out.
Frankfurt. You and I,
Frankfurt to you and I. The holders go out in the first round of the German Cup for the first time since 1996 when Kaiserslautern lost. Amazing game of football. I mean, check it out. It's action-packed. You know,
what's amazing about it?
Ulm hit the bar in the first minute.
Uh-huh.
Great attack in football both ways. Eintracht hit the post twice. Two offside goals disallowed. Ulm scrambled one in, defending for the lives, 75th minute. Long ball over the top. Vitaly Lux is running, hits him on the shoulder. He's not even looking at the ball. And actually falls nicely for him. He runs through to score the second. Vitaly Lux, he is a Kyrgyzstan international. I'm not sure why he's not at the games. He's got five international goals in 20 matches. And he is one of those Germans. A lot of Germans during the war got deported to Central Asia because of the war. And
what do you mean they got deported? Like
literally lifted up and deported into Central Asia because the Germans were coming and they were suspected of potential collaborationism with the coming Germans. So the families got deported into Central Asia.
Okay, by who? By the Soviet authorities.
I mean, there was a German Republic out on the Volga and they got lifted in August or September 1941, put in the trains, out you go into the east.
Okay.
So a lot of these ethnic Germans were allowed to go to Germany after the unification of Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, he was one of those families. So he was born in Bashkortostan in, I think it's 89. At the age of six, he moved to Ulm, bounced around lower divisions. And this is the greatest goal of his career. And in the end, Ulm hung on despite a late Frankfurt goal. And it was lovely scenes. There was a defender, Luigi Campagna, his oppa, his granddad was crying in the crowd. There's absolutely touching scenes. 18,500 people in the stadium. Oh, it was beautiful. Ulm themselves have never really achieved much, played in the Bundesliga for a season. So for them, I think this is a celebration for a very, very long time. And also, second defeat in a row for the new Eintracht Frankfurt manager, Adolf Hütter. You heard the try, James. Hütter. The guy who won three titles, who just won the title with Young Boys in Switzerland after three seasons there. So a difficult start for him.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Leicester beat Wolves 2-0, whispering Claude with the win that he needed to keep his job, or one of the wins he needed. He said, we were lucky, but they looked good, didn't they? James Maddison particularly, again looking like a player. Did you catch much of this?
Yeah, he's a really good player, Maddison. I mean, I don't watch much Championship football, but those people I know who did were just raving about him. And I wouldn't be surprised if he actually got an England call-up quite soon. I mean, okay. Southgate's been so keen to call up youngsters early. And if he continues playing like this, I know it's only two games in, but he just seems to run the game.
Leicester picked up Maddison from Norwich, anonymous true fan, saying players like Maddison of Leicester, and we mentioned David Brooks before at Bournemouth, had good starts. Why aren't other Premier League teams giving chances to younger players from the lower divisions? I do not see the quality of players from the Eredivisie surpassing the Championship.
Again, read nearly everything Daniel Story does. I think he took some quotes out after England won the under-17 World Cup. Basically just took quotes from every single manager that had a player at the under-17s. And it was very interesting seeing the difference between, say, Pep Guardiola going, I'm going to give Phil Foden a minute, and Roy Hodgson, who is basically going, I'm in the middle of a relegation battle. I don't have time to blood a youngster.
Right.
And I think time is the big one. I think, yes, there is a tendency in the Premier League to buy players from the fashionable leagues and with the fashionable passports, other than the one, you know, very good players in the Football League. But you just got to go with your gut and go with what you know. And I think quite a few of these managers know.
Sometimes you don't think you can afford the gamble.
Yes.
Okay.
And not a good weekend for Wolves right back Matt Doherty.
Oh.
Yeah. First of all, he missed a very easy chance at 0-0. And then he scored that quite unfortunate own goal that cannoned off his head and went into the top corner. And then he was on the end of a terrible tackle from Jamie Vardy, which I thought was quite rightly a red card.
Right. Kennedy arguably had a worse weekend, would you say?
That's bad.
Carl, you watched this game because you had the worst weekend of all then, probably. Was it quite fun, actually, the 0-0 Cardiff-Newcastle?
No, it was. It might have been the worst televised game of Premier League football I've seen.
Really? So Kennedy missed a stoppage time penalty, which would have earned three massive points for Newcastle. He's going to probably get a ban retrospectively for kicking out Camarasa. And also, now you were eulogising Kovacic for his 100% passing stats. Kennedy's weren't quite as good, were they, Carl?
Zero. 0% passing accuracy in the first half.
How many did he attempt?
Too many.
Really? Okay.
it was bizarre. So Cardiff are playing a very unique style of football in the Premier League. They're going to play very direct, very long ball, bypass centre midfield, which would be effective if they had strikers that are good enough at this level. They're not particularly. So they're quite blunt in attack. Newcastle are, depending on who you talk to, hamstrung by Mike Ashley, by House of Fraser, playing within themselves because Rafa Benitez got these players to play far above their talent last season or just at the end of their tether. So it was a very, very bizarre game to watch. It was the two bold men fighting over a comb.
Oh, dear.
And Kennedy, I've never seen a football player have as bad a 90 minutes as game.
Really? That's like, the worst one you've ever seen?
It was awful. No passes. Should have been sent off.
Because last year he was one of the success stories at Newcastle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it seemed as if he was, to use the poker analogy, he was playing on tilt. Basically, he has the first half and it's not working. So rather than one of the old stories is when Steven Gerrard first started playing for Liverpool.
His
first big long pass didn't work. Jamie Carragher went, just make sure your next pass, 5 yards, really short, build your confidence back up. Kennedy was the complete opposite. He got more and more outlandish and ambitious with his play, and it just wasn't working. So prior to the penalty, he took a free kick from the edge of the box when Jonjo Selvey's there and went, stop it. Stop giving him the ball.
Right. I'm surprised Shelby himself didn't, you know.
Yeah, I was very surprised Shelby deputised to Kennedy on the set pieces there.
What was the tilt analogy? Sorry, I think I...
Playing on tilt, the poker analogy. Basically, you get emotionally charged and you start playing more aggressive.
All right, because I was thinking pinball. I was very confused. But yes, with you now. Yeah.
The penalty was also statistically the worst place you can put a penalty.
Where is the worst place you can put a penalty?
It depends whether you're like left-footed or right-footed, but a third of the way up the goal, slightly across your body, if that makes sense.
So slightly across the body.
So he's left-footed, so he went to his right slightly.
Slightly to the keeper's left.
That's about 52, 53% chance of it going in.
Okay.
Where's the worst?
Where's the best place? Would it be top corner?
Top corner, but if you look at the stats, it's quite interesting. Pretty much anywhere in the top half of the goal is 99% goes in.
Hmm. David Priest, friend of the podcast, says, if you want to score a penalty against me, aim for my face when I'm standing right in the middle of the goal. Sasha?
Well, I used to just...
I think David Priest wants people to miss.
Basically, just like, aim for my face because I'm going to move left or right. And it's right. very hard
The thing is, like, I mean, the poor level I play at, I actually decided that the best strategy is just to react because the penalty...
You wait and then you react.
I used to go to my left a lot because thinking, again, statistically, right footers quite often like to put it there. And then I failed to save a penalty for God knows how long. So now I just react. And I think what Michael is saying there, you can actually pretty much react to that penalty and save it because it's not far enough in the corner.
Right. Burnley lost at home to Watford.
Watford are looking good. There's continuity. There's a system. There's personnel that have been there for more than one season.
Right. Okay. So, you know, rather than bringing in etc. But you said what's not continuity is the fact that previously they could not get a point or even score a goal away from home. But they go up to Turf Moor, which is not like meant to be an easy place to do it. They win 3-1. Is that Europa League hangover?
Possibly. And also possibly, you know, the whatever dark magic Sean Dyche does to get his defence to play that way might have been figured out.
Do you think?
So they play a very, very interesting defensive model where essentially defenders don't so much mark attackers from crosses, but so much mark areas on the goal line. Block
zonal marking.
Yes, so it's very high. They achieve a very very high amount of blocks on shots last season. Had a very very good season from their goalkeeper as well, and it just doesn't seem to be working.
Right.
As well,
you mentioned the goalkeeper there.
I think the Europa League thing's the key. I mean, people talk about Europa League hangovers or European hangovers in terms of matches, but I think the lack of training time. You know, before they would have had 8 days or 7 days to prepare for that game. Now it's probably been one on the training pitch once they'd got back.
Right.
But the goals there were remarkable. I mean, three really good goals from Watford, completely different goals. He had an acrobatic finish, a lovely outside of the foot goal from Deeney, which reminded me a little bit of the Falcao one in the World Cup, if you remember that. And a great pass from Doucouré to him for that goal.
Yeah.
And then a long ranger from Will Hughes after a pretty bad giveaway from Matt Loughton.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, Dyche was whining about Hughes should have been sent off. And I think he's got a case, actually. There were some bad tackles in the Premier League this weekend. I mean, if you look at the World Cup, the interesting thing, there wasn't a single red card for a bad tackle. There was a couple of last man fouls. But no, there was barely a bad tackle in the whole tournament. And then you come back to the Premier League and you see some, like that Jamie Vardy one. It's just unnecessary. It's just completely unnecessary, isn't it? It still persists, I think, in English football more than other leagues. You do just get these really wretched tackles.
Mm. Okay, what do you think about Everton and Saints? What's going to happen to them? Everton, 2-1 winners at Goodison. Stuart Benjamin asked, what are the odds on Richarlison being top scorer? Banter. But I think actually producer Ben's going to ask that question a bit later on, Stuart, if you're interested. So hang about. I mean, he's officially a bargain now, as we always said, etc.
He was always going to come good. I think.
Was he? No, he wasn't.
The big thing about Richarlison that a lot of people laughed about when the deal went through, that I think a lot of people forgot, was he was knackered. He was 20 years of age.
Yes.
He'd played half of the season in Brazil, comes over to the Premier League, is playing very well in the first half of Watford. Then January starts. He also played the under 20 World Cup. The boy was tired. Gomez, his Brazilian compatriot, who basically looked after him when he first came to Watford, is dropped from the side. So he no longer looks around the pitch and has a guy who just goes, don't worry, it'll be fine.
Yeah,
he was going to be fine. His potential ceiling is very very high. He's Evan. He's with Marco Silva, the guy who brought him over to England. He's been well rested. He's going to have a lot of fun because he's also playing in this weird sort of free inside forward role for Everton. And Everton, they love a guy who tries and scores a goal every now and again. So I think,
who doesn't, Carl?
Mourinho, really.
Oily Sailor. Pointing out that under Silva, two games, 12 shots on target from Everton. Allardyce 21 in 9 games. So,
yeah, although the caveat there is a lot of their shots on target came from set pieces, which Allardyce wasn't... a very Allardyce thing to do. But they had some nice routines. I mean, the Walcott goal was a really kind of classic play around the wall thing. They also did a thing before where they had... Idrissa Gueye had an attempt from what I think I can call a Paul Scholes attempt from a corner. Hmm. People know what that means.
No, go on, tell me.
You know, like, rather than hitting into the box, cut it back to the D, and then he has a volley.
The Bradford goal. Okay.
So yes, they've clearly been working on set pieces, and it's just a small thing, but the way that they celebrated after the Walcott goal, you know, when a team scores like a set piece routine, it must feel so good, and you just had a kind of sense of unity that you didn't have under Allardyce, which is pretty important.
And then I think that also reinforces the belief in the manager. We worked on this with him. Mm. Now we're scoring this goal. And I think if you look at the way the atmosphere, I mean, speaking to Everton fans, you know, the way it's lifted, and, you know, he hasn't, you know, he only brought Richarlison in, but the new manager, a new approach, and they're playing football. These same players can actually play football, which is fun, good to watch. Yes, I mean, Walcott missed chances and whatever, but they were actually really good to watch. I think Everton fans at the moment, for them, you know, within 4 months, is such a contrast. And I think they're very much enjoying it. And I also would like to pick up on Pickford. I think Michael asked me, about him before the game. And yes, I would agree, it was a bit of a strange one. We sort of thought about it, and it seems to be sometimes when he makes a mistake early on, maybe he kind of, it does affect him somewhat. I mean, his initial mistake did lead to that absolutely extraordinary save from Danny Ings when he picked himself up and managed to somehow save that. But maybe he's affected a bit by the nerves sometimes.
Yeah, I didn't like his challenge on Ings quite late in the second half. I know goalkeepers always get away with that, but in that situation, he becomes an outfield player. You're not allowed to use his hands. If an outfield player had dived in like that and done this weird karate scissor kick and caught an opponent in the back like that, definitely be a foul, might be a red card. But goalkeepers, you know, the old Harold Schumacher legacy seems to be surviving. Goalkeepers can do whatever they want in that situation, it seems, which I find really odd.
Well, Mark Hughes at least took it sportingly after.
moan.
Anyway, right, go on, Sasha.
I quite like the stat about Danny Ings. His last three Premier League goals came for three different managers.
But all against Everton?
Only two, because I think he scored against West Brom for Klopp, which I thought was a nice touch. And I actually thought Danny Ings... he was involved. Mm. Yeah, I mean, he missed a few, but I thought he was
Danny Ings, he was involved.
And again, another player came back from an ACL injury, so very much. Oh, I mean, good for you.
He's had a really terrible record with injuries at Liverpool. I mean, the reason let him go is because he wanted to play more regularly, which is understandable. I think he leaves Liverpool. I think he's on loan at the moment, but they'll buy him on very good terms, basically. But it just didn't work out for him.
I imagine that when Ings was injured, the doctors always were confident that he would make a full recovery. Anyway. Stuart,
terrible,
if you want to know the answer to your question about Richarlison, here's your moment. Producer Ben has been speaking to Paddy Power.
Thank you, Jimbo. Lee Price from Paddy Power is on the line. And Lee, we've talked about Man U and Man City a lot on the show already, so let's talk about a couple of the other things. Let's start with West Ham. They're not doing very well. 2 defeats out of 2. Are they going to do a Palace? They've got some horrible games coming up. Could they go 7 games without a win here?
Yes, when you mentioned this, I thought you were being slightly harsh, Ben, but actually when you look at the fixture list, God, they're in trouble. We make it a very short price, 9-4, that they go 7 games without a win. It's a horrible run coming up. It's almost like you can't just spend money in a squad and expect it to play coherently.
Well, I'll tell you someone who did cost a lot of money and who people were laughing about, that's Richarlison. But he's doing all right over at Everton. Could he be the top scorer this season?
2 games in, he is doing all right. £50 million bargain, I reckon. We don't think he will be the top scorer. In fact, he's a very long price. So I know you've got some recent form in tipping long prices, but this one, if you do fancy it, is 66-1. That puts him behind the likes of Marko Arnautović and Wilfried Zaha, and the same price as Mitrovic. So we don't fancy it, but at least he hasn't been the laughing stock yet.
Let's talk about a surer thing then. Chelsea, they've started very well under Maurizio Sarri. Haven't been the toughest of fixtures. Apologies, Arsenal fans. Are they going to finish in the top four this season?
Yeah, it's remarkable what difference 2 games can make. They are now odds on to finish in the top four. We make them third favourites to do so. And they've leapfrogged Spurs and Manchester United in that betting. You mentioned United failing earlier in the show. They're now out to our fifth favourites of the top four. So we're predicting they finish fifth. They're even money now to finish top four. Big trouble there.
You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. Carl, actually, you're going to be back here tomorrow. Oh, Parts Unknown, the wrestling podcast, is getting back underway.
I will indeed. I will be indeed.
Have you done much prep?
I have watched over 9 hours worth of wrestling this
weekend.
Is that
a lot of wrestling?
Yes, I've watched WrestleMania 2000 up until WrestleMania 18. And then I watched SummerSlam and NXT. So
it must still just be a big blur of leotard by now.
Leotard, colour. Sweat, pecs, pyro.
Right.
Wrestling's the one to rot, and the more you understand about wrestling, the more you understand about professional football.
And about life, I like to say.
Very much so.
Yeah. Okay, Sasha, looking forward to whatever you're going to do next and hearing about it. What are you up to this week?
Palace Liverpool tonight.
Right, you're going along?
Yeah.
Of course, brilliant. Prediction, so we can laugh at you afterwards?
2-0 Liverpool.
Okay, fantastic. Michael, you're back with us soon, I hope, next week?
Yes, next week. I'm at Arsenal West Ham on Saturday, so we can talk about that then.
Ah, that'll be good. And Thursday, of course, Totally returns with James Horncastle, David Priest, with his face. And Jules.
His face is very beautiful.
Yeah, and Julien Laurent will be with us, and he might be telling us about Thierry Henry's next job, which... Anyway, that's all coming up on Thursday. Have a great time in the meanwhile, listener. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And make sure you check out our other football podcasts, the revamped Totally Football League Show with Caroline Barker and the brand new Totally Scottish Football Show. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.